Hello, everybody. Terrence Lehue here with another episode of the Intellectual Agrarian Podcast, where we talk philosophy from the farm. Our guest today is Josh Satin from Satin Hill Farm in Raleigh, North Carolina. Together, we'll be discussing the differences and potential challenges of suburban farming, how Josh became a farmer after teaching and brewing, why he gave up his ducks, and much more. You won't want to miss today's episode with Josh Satin. Josh Satin, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Terrence. I am pumped to be here. Thanks for having me.
Before we start, would you mind sharing a brief biographical sketch with the audience?
All right, I'll try to make it brief. Past careers have been in teaching high school and brewing professional beer. And that's my two, spent about 5 years in each of those fields before going into farming. So yeah, that's my background really. So nothing to do with farming. Started my farm last year, and this is my second season. We live in Raleigh, North Carolina. My wife and I are both from Boston and have also lived in Colorado for a while, but we're here and this is year two. The farm is really small. We have a 2-acre suburban lot, and I would say the total area that I'm growing vegetables is about an eighth of an acre, maybe a little less now. And we also do pasture-raised layers.
Now, before we dig into the farming, because of course, that's obviously what we generally talk about, I would be remiss, and I would have friends that would disown me if I did not ask you a little bit about your brewing background.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So I started home brewing when I was a teenager, and it was sort of always something I was interested in. And then, you know, it was like, hey, this is really cool. And we moved back from Colorado to Boston, and I was kind of looking for a change after leaving teaching. And so I took a job, worked my way up. I worked in a couple breweries in Boston. And then when we moved down here, I worked at a couple different breweries here, from small brew pubs to small production facilities to like a little bit larger production facility. So I've made a lot of beer in my life. And yeah, I mean, it was a different point in my life too, but yeah, it was a lot of fun, a lot of hard work, very rewarding. There's a lot of similarities with that and farming for sure.
Well, you see, that was one of the things I thought was interesting because, of course, in the prep for interviewing someone, I listened to your other interviews, and I think it was the No-Till podcast you were talking about how, because of your background in brewing, you have a really great mindset for, okay, it's time to do a production run, and you do it, instead of, I'm sad to say, I think in a lot of cases, farmers can kind of, what's the word I'd use, weeble a little on, well, I should get it done, but, you know, we can put off just a little bit instead of, okay, X, Y, Z, we have to move, move, move.
Yeah, I think, you know, in talking with other farmers or gardeners or people looking to get into this space, I think there's, you know, people come from lots of different backgrounds, and that's why it's awesome, but you know, I definitely have that production efficiency mindset, and, you know, it's helpful. Like, okay, well, if we need this thing in a month, we have to do this now. And these are the steps you need to do that. And, you know, so planning ahead and, you know, making sure you have the inputs and do you actually have enough seed for 3 beds of this or, you know, whatever the story might be. So I think that organization and the other part is the multitasking part. Like when you're brewing, you're often doing a lot of things at the same time. And I think that's really helpful too when you're farming.
So I'm a little curious, have you been using any of the Lean Farm stuff from Ben Hartman?
You know, I have yet to read any of his books, and I mean to, but I've just been too busy to read anything this summer. And yeah, I think I probably am using a lot of them. I can't specifically pick them out because I haven't read the books yet. But everything I've seen from Ben Hartman is just awesome. So I've enjoyed his content online for sure.
Especially if you do have a production background, it's a very fascinating look at the way I'd phrase it is that too often we look at industrial models as the enemy, and in some cases they are in sustainable agriculture, but in terms of efficiency, the efficiency techniques that they use in those environments can be incredibly helpful in an agricultural context.
Absolutely. I mean, I saw that a lot in brewing too, just to bring that in. I mean, small breweries are terribly inefficient coming to chemical use, energy use, water use, all that stuff. So, I mean, you can pull information and ideas from all sorts of places, but yeah, you got to try to keep it efficient. And, you know, things like market gardening, it's so labor intensive and so physical that, you know, if you can save, you know, I know Ben talks about like saving steps, you know, how many times you have to touch something, you know, things like that. I think that stuff's so important, and it's hard to get in that mindset sometimes when you have your ways and you're trying to make them more efficient.
So one of the distinctions of your operation is that you have ducks as well as chickens.
Not anymore. Yeah. We had to give up our ducks. Most people don't know this, but the female ducks are the loud ones as opposed to chickens, where the male chickens, the roosters, are the loud ones. And so, you know, we don't have
any. It doesn't tend to work well when you're doing laying ducks then.
Yeah, because we need all females. And so, you know, we don't have an HOA where we live, but there's houses sort of in the neighborhood, like behind our property, and they were getting really upset with the noise. And they had every right to get upset just because it was really loud. I mean, we had almost 50 ducks, and when they start quacking, it gets really loud. And ducks don't sleep at night like chickens do. They like party all night, and they take cat naps during the day. So at any point during the day, they can just like start going crazy. And they didn't have any legal right to come after us whatsoever. But, you know, just by living in harmony with your neighbors and your community, like, we decided to just to, you know, go back to chickens.
Well, that brings up an interesting point, though. What do you find are some of the unique situations like this you find yourself in your particular farming context? Because you're not an urban farmer necessarily, but you're more of a suburban farmer.
Yeah, I would definitely say suburban. I think, you know, that's the main thing that we've had so far. You know, we're obviously limited in space. We're not, you know, as I said, we have 2 acres, but about half of it's wooded. We had to take down a third to a half an acre of trees this year. So that was a big decision for us. I obviously don't like to cut down trees, but it was something that we pretty much had to do. And, you know, because we're in North Carolina, there's a lot of trees. And so getting enough sunlight onto our beds and to, you know, getting sundown to be able to grow grass and pasture, I think that's been one of the struggles for us, just because it's not an open area. There's just a lot of trees.
So what led you to Raleigh from Boston?
Oh, that's a long conversation, Terrence. The main reasons, you know, my wife and I are both from Boston, and we moved to Colorado. When we came back, it was just, you know, that's where our family was, and so that's where we wanted to be. And since then, our families all moved south as well. But the main reasons were the cold weather. Our last winter that we were there, we got 7.5 feet of snow in 3.5 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, we grew up with snow, and, you know, I'm not like scared of it, but it was just one of those, like, you know what, I don't know if I want to deal with this anymore. And we were living in Boston, like pretty urban area. And a cost of living is just a huge difference. The Northeast is so expensive. And, you know, we had a small condo in Boston, and we came down here, and for less money, we bought like what I think is a large house, with 2 acres for way less money. And, you know, people here are just, they're friendlier, they're nicer. I think, you know, the pace of life is a little bit slower. And, yeah, I connect with that for sure.
Well, was a little amused when I heard Raleigh, simply because I grew up watching the Andy Griffith Show. And so they're always talking about Raleigh, and I think Mount Airy is in that general direction, and that's where Andy Griffith was actually originally from and kind of what Mayberry was based on.
Yeah, I don't know about that stuff, sorry.
That's okay. I will forgive you, but I have to say, you get homework. Okay. Attention, listeners, Josh needs to go home and watch the Andy Griffith Show. In fact, any of you listening that have never gotten the joy of watching Andy Griffith and Barney Fife need to go and watch it. It's on Netflix. Just go ahead and make a night of it. So back to agriculture, after I made that immense plug for the Andy Griffith Show, what produce are you raising on your operation?
Yeah, so we're mainly focusing on greens, you know, sort of trying to do that high rotation, high value crop type thing, like, you know, salad greens, lettuce, baby greens, microgreens. That's sort of the heart of it. And then doing some seasonal crops, like we did some tomatoes first half of the summer. Now we're doing some eggplants. We did cucumbers and patty pan squash and, you know, some seasonal stuff, but mostly that. And then, you know, we're increasing our pastured egg operation. We just find that the eggs are just incredible. And, you know, people love them, and the fact that they can get them directly from a farm. And we've connected with, I don't know why I say we, it's just me. I've connected with, a farmer, not too far from me. And so the feed I get is all local. They get all the ingredients either from his farm or from another North Carolina farm, and it's all non-GMO. And like they mill it and I get it the next day. So like it's just such a local thing. It's just, I just love it. And the customers have been digging it too.
There's something so special about good farm fresh egg. I grew up on an operation that had farm fresh eggs. We raised organic layers, pasture raised, all that fun stuff. And then I kind of grew up and I had to get my own eggs. I'll tell you what, there is no, not even a hint of resemblance between the egg you get from a grocery store and a good farm fresh egg.
Yeah. And I think the first time that people, you know, who try them, they just think they don't even understand. There's just like a totally different experience.
It pains me physically to order eggs when I'm at a restaurant because I know they are not going to be anywhere near as close to as good as what I can get at home.
Yeah. I've had some conversations with, some of my customers about that, and not just in terms of eggs, like some produce too. You know, I think the people that are hunting out the really high quality produce, because I sell to families, and you know, they're getting fresh food from our farm, and they'll go out to restaurants and they're like disappointed by salads. Mm-hmm. And that's like I think there's a big shift from, you know, I don't know what time period, but we used to go out for really, really nice food. And now a lot of people are like sourcing really good ingredients that may be better than some of the restaurants are getting or they're willing to pay for, and just enjoying that themselves.
Mm-hmm. We've been fortunate enough on this show to have Chef Jean DeRosier from a great restaurant in Lake Bluff, Illinois, that does local food. And thankfully, there are more and more of those restaurants popping up, but they're still not the norm.
Yeah, I think I sell to a couple restaurants, and I'm trying to increase that sales outlet for me because I really enjoy working with the chefs. But I think there's always a little bit of I don't know. I mean, you have these chefs that are really motivated to, you know, use local food. And the issue is that it's just more expensive. And, you know, if they're buying food off a truck, it's like a third to a fifth of the cost or whatever. And, you know, the restaurant owners or managers or wherever, they're, you know, they don't want to eat that cost or raise their prices or whatever. So I think it's hard. I think the customers want it though. It's just a matter of, you know, when does that happen? When do they want it enough where, you know, the restaurants are going to pay for it?
Mm-hmm. So how do you market your products?
So, I'm pretty active on social media. Instagram has been my main thing. And, yeah, that's been something I've really worked on. And in a previous business of mine, I started and owned a homebrew store in between brewing gigs and sold that business. But one of the things I learned from that was I need to do more marketing. And so that's been a big push of mine is the social media stuff. And then it's just a lot of word of mouth. I mean, I'm looking at local families. So it's friends and friends of friends and that sort of thing. I've used Facebook marketing a little bit with mixed results. And, you know, now I'm doing YouTube, which I don't know how that influences my local sales necessarily, but that's another way to just, you know, market and brand yourself.
You also incorporate permaculture practices into your farming process. Would you mind giving us an example of what that looks like?
Absolutely. I think you have to, if you're going to go down that rabbit hole with permaculture, there's a lot of really strong things in there that I think can be helpful. But you can't be too idealistic about it because, in my opinion, agriculture is not a natural process or mm-hmm. thing that's going on, right? There's nowhere where it's just like, you know, so much of one crop out there. And so the diversity thing is a challenge for sure. But one thing that some of the main things about permaculture, like work with nature, not against it, right? Less inputs, more outputs, you know, stuff like that. And I think that I try to look through a permaculture lens a little bit, but you have to be realistic about it. So that's, you know, usually if there's something comes up, you know, turning a problem into a solution, like that one is huge. Like, you know, look at what you have in front of you. And the big thing I also take out of permaculture is observational based decisions. So if you just stop and really observe what's going on, if it's, you know, the way water is running across your property when it's raining really hard, or why is that plant not doing well, you know, as opposed to just like blindly applying some some substance to try to make things better, like actually observing what's going on and trying to make decisions based on that. I think that those are the things that I use from permaculture.
And then you also use your chickens to a certain degree in a more active role on the farm, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. The chickens have been instrumental in getting my beds prepped. I haven't opened up new beds since the spring, but I'll park them in one area for an extended period of time. And they just scratch and peck and do their chicken thing. And they'll eat like all the vegetation, like till there's nothing left if you leave them in there long enough. And at the same time, they're dropping a lot of manure, which is tons of nitrogen. And so they'll really prep the ground for you. You know, after that, I'll come in and lay down compost and I'm ready to go. You know, instead of running a tiller through it, the chickens are my little tillers. So I've used them for that. They eat a lot of crop residue. I'm not using their manure back in the garden, but because we're rotationally grazing them, I'm having them rebuild the topsoil and, you know, build more pasture for them to get more forage from. You know, when we had the trees taken out, they just totally inverted everything. I lost all the soil I built. It was like a year and a half of rotational grazing chickens and ducks, and the soil was getting darker, and then they came in and it's just like, oh, starting over again. So yeah, there's things like that. I think there's some, you know, using them together. I don't let them run through my garden because of food safety reasons.
Yes.
And then also I have permanent beds, so I don't want them going in there screwing everything up. Mm-hmm. So for that, those are like the main things I've used them for besides, you know, getting eggs from them.
What is the soil like?
Hard clay.
Oh, well, I've seen enough of that in Wisconsin, but
yeah. Yeah. It's like a, you know, that red clay you see in the South, and, it holds a lot of water, but it also, when it dries out, it becomes like a rock. And it's like, you know, especially in the summer, we get these really intense, quick storms and not much water gets in the ground because the ground is like so hard and yeah. So it's not easy to work with. So I've just been laying down lots and lots of compost on the surface and letting the biology work its way in.
Mm-hmm. What do you use for compost?
I buy a commercial compost, and I'm lucky that I have a place somewhat local to me that just makes great compost. So it's a mixture. I haven't asked them, you know, really, really specifically, but I know it's a mixture of food waste from some local universities and colleges, a couple kinds of manure, and probably some sort of, you know, wood or carbon source. But it comes, it's like awesome quality, and I can get it whenever I want. So I'm really lucky about it.
So what was it that made you decide, you know, I'm finished brewing, I think that farming is my next step?
So there was a little bit of time between brewing and farming, but I think I've also always had a concern for environmental stuff. And when we moved to Raleigh, we rented a place for a year before we bought our house. And, you know, my wife and I, we were talking a lot about, you know, when we get settled, like, you know, let's try to live a little more sustainably. And I've said this before, but like, you know, driving a Prius and recycling is like not really going to cut it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we started with chickens because that's like, you know, the gateway drug for farming. you gotta start with chickens. That's what you do. You get started and then you're like, oh, this is really cool. Well, let's do this. Let's do that. And, you know, we got chickens, they all got sick, and, we had to get rid of them. I was buying all the goofiest chickens. They were totally not like the most productive chickens, but, you know, you buy and sell them, and one of them sick. And then, so we got rid of them, we started over. But then before I got started with a new flock, I really did a lot of research, and that's when I sort of stumbled upon permaculture and rotational grazing. And, you know, I made a mobile coop, and so went down that road. And then I said, you know what, like, I'm going to get some beds going. I had never gardened anything before in my life. My wife was always a gardener. And I was like, all right, let's set up some beds. And I'm, of course, like, I stumbled across market gardening, and I'm thinking, these are like, I love the way these guys grow. This is cool. I'm going to set it up like this. So I did the 30-inch bed and the whole thing. And all of a sudden I started planting like long rows of stuff. And I'm like, wait a minute, this is going to be a lot of food. And, you know, friends were kind of like, hey, yeah, we'll get a box of food from you. And it just sort of started like that. And I, you know, I was just looking for something different to do because I had left brewing and I really didn't want to go back into it for a lot of reasons. So, and it gives me a lot of flexibility too. My wife works a lot of long hours, and, you know, we got two boys, and so I do a lot of the stuff around the house, and I have a lot of flexibility with my schedule. So it's working right now for us.
Where do you see the farm going forward? You're at year two right now. Where do you see year three?
I don't know. I'm trying to figure out part two of season two here. I've been putting a lot of thought into this lately as the summer wears on me quite a bit. It's been really hot here, as it is in a lot of places.
I can imagine.
July, we had like 4 weeks. It was over 95 and humid every day. And, you know, yeah, it's really, really tough, not just on you physically, but on, you know, on your plants and growing and everything else. So I'm sort of trying to do some reflecting and think about that. And I'm trying to, you know, focus on things that are working and sort of let go of some things that are not working. I think I'd like to continue sort of my sales outlets, you know, with families, restaurants. And I also started doing some online ordering that's more like a la carte and delivery to your house. I just started it, so I don't know how successful it's going to be. We're going to do more eggs because I think the demand is there, and I think the product is awesome, and it's also very consistent. And I really love working with animals for sure. But we're going to keep growing food and doing that. And the other part of it is because I used to be a teacher, I've really sort of locked into a lot of the educational side of this, and that's been crazy and cool and awesome. And so the avenue for me has been through YouTube, and that's been a big chunk of my time the last few months for sure. So I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen moving forwards, but I think it's some sort of combination of those things.
Have you guys debated putting in broilers?
Yes, we have talked about it, but my wife said no, so we're not doing it.
Well, you know what? That is a great reasoning to determine whether or not to do something.
Yeah, I want every animal. She's like, no, we're not slaughtering animals at our house, and you know, we're not going to do it. We also don't have a lot of grass, and so I think a lot of times people get started in homesteading or small scale farming, and you know, you want to do everything, and
yes,
you're really not good at everything if you do too many things. And so I think, and also like everything adds up. It's not like when you do two things, it's not double. It's always like two and a half or three times. There's always just more stuff going on. And so I just keeping it simple. We have one flock. They're all the same breed. Like it's just as simple as I can possibly make it. We're not doing broilers.
It sounds like you guys are taking a very logical approach to this, because that is the mistake most homesteaders make is, oh, Joel Salatin does this. I need to do that. Not realizing he is a completely different context than their suburban lot. So it's refreshing to hear someone who put thought into that.
Oh, I think about it a lot. Thank you. But, you know, we all have failures and mistakes. And, you know, you look at the models that other people have put out in front of you and you're like, hey, check out this, you know, urban farmer or this market gardener or whatever. And if I just do that, I'll be successful. And I always say, like, probably almost every day, like context is the most important thing, because just because someone's growing this or doing this, it doesn't mean it works on your property or with your life or with your customers or your market. You know, tons of people get into like microgreens, for example, but they live in the middle of nowhere. And it's like, do you have a sales outlet for that? Mm-hmm. Or can you get $6 a pound for pasture raised broilers? You know, maybe it doesn't make sense for you in your market, or maybe, you know, you don't like the smell of chickens. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of things that go into it, and you got to start somewhere though. And I think a lot of people get in too deep too quickly. And I fully admit, and I have admitted that this year I expanded too quickly, and I'm actually dialing back, because when things get bigger, you can lose control pretty quickly. And so you got to be really careful about that.
Josh, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Winding up here, I'd like to ask, what is one of your favorite pieces of the farm in terms of a product you guys generate?
I'll give you two examples, because there's very different things. I love the eggs. I think they're just unbelievable. I think it's a great product. But my favorite crop to grow is lettuce. That is just, I love growing lettuce. The first time that we grew it and I harvested it, and I'd never eaten lettuce like that, it just blew my mind. I just have never had anything like that before. And yeah, it's just, that's my favorite thing to grow for sure.
Josh, where can people go to learn more about you and your work?
So if you're into the social media thing, Instagram would be the best place. And that's Satin Hill Farm, SATTIN Hill Farm. And then also I do a lot of cool content on YouTube, and that's just my name, Josh Satin. So those would be the two best places to find me.
Josh, thank you again for joining us on the show.
Absolutely, Terrence. Thank you so much. And it's my pleasure.
Big thanks again to Josh for joining us on the show today. To learn more about his farm, be sure to check out Satin Hill Farm on all the socials and his YouTube channel, which has some great farming content. Thanks again for listening. If you're new to the show, please subscribe on whatever your podcast player of choice is. While you are there, please leave us a nice review, letting others know how great the show is. It really helps out the show and grows the audience. Tips on how to do this can be found at intellectualagrarian.com/review. This has been Terrence Lehue and the Intellectual Agrarian Podcast, reminding you to keep farming the dream.